Coming up on Hear Me Out. He was the king of the Twin Ports airwaves. Well, all right, the Duke. And with his Duchess, they're back in our studios again.
Hey, hi, everyone. Here it is, Tuesday. Just past 5 o'clock, that means it must be the Duke Sports Radio Show here on 91.3 KUWS.
Then, you probably heard about the new TV festival coming to town. But you may not have seen the whole picture.
Duluth will host ITV Fest, which brings together...
Duluth is set to receive a big national spotlight.
The big announcement for Duluth today, $1.5 million...
We take a look at the financial records of the Catalyst Content Festival. And if you've had enough of firecrackers this week, join visitors from Japan in ringing the peace bell and a calming cup of tea. These stories and our news and review after this. Welcome to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. You've probably heard about the new TV festival coming to town.
Come October 2019, the city of Duluth will host a convention for Hollywood executives known as the Independence Television Festival.
The city of Duluth and the entire region has a golden opportunity this fall to become part of a growing creative industry. Duluth will host ITV Fest, which brings together...
Duluth is set to receive a big national spotlight.
The big announcement for Duluth today, $1.5 million is expected to be pumped into the city's economy because it's the new home of the Independent Television, or ITV Festival.
But you may not have seen the whole picture. We take a look at the financial records of the Catalyst Content Festival, the new name in its new home after moving from Vermont of the Independent Television Fest. But first, a look back at Twin Ports Media. He was the king of Twin Ports airwaves. Well, all right, the Duke. And with his Duchess, they're back in our studios again.
Hey, hi, everyone. Here it is, Tuesday. Just past 5 o'clock, that means it must be the Duke Sports Radio Show here on 91.3 KUWS Superior, 102.9 Ashland. We call it the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We talk about the issues that matter to you, and have we got a program for you tonight.
That's Duke Scorridge, the legendary Twin Ports broadcaster who had already made his mark as an anchor at all three local TV stations when he took over an earlier version of this program almost 2 decades ago. Joining him was Patty McNulty, his sidekick and later his spouse, a broadcasting dynamo in her own right, who bought and later sold 6 area radio stations. The Duke Scores Show with Patty McNulty was a daily program on KUWS Superior and WUWS Ashland when I first joined them as a guest, as best as we all can determine, 15 years ago this week. And now, they're repaying the visit. We are here with Duke Scorridge and Patty McNulty. Duke is a veteran of many broadcast outlets in Duluth Superior. I'm going to let you explain which ones those are or how many you want
to. It's easier to talk about which ones they aren't.
Well, yes.
We only have an hour, Robin.
There weren't any, were there?
And Patty is also a veteran of broadcasting around the state in various different ways, around the states, I should say. So, that's my poor attempt at an introduction, but the main reason you're here is because you used to be here.
Yes.
This is home turf for you.
Yeah. I just want to say that this was about as much fun as you could have with your clothes on, being a host on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And I would say, with or without clothes, this was the best.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that they gave us such great freedom to run the program the way we chose to run it, with guests nationally, there was never a budget set. And then to take calls and occasionally run, well, more than occasionally, run past the top of the hour when we were supposed to be done because we were still taking calls. It was everything about the people who were listening to the program, that it was their program and they were going to have a voice. I don't think we ever hung up on anybody until they felt that they had completely said what they wanted to get off of their mind. And that's just the way radio should be. This kind of forum should be open to everyone to express their opinion, regardless of whether the host of the program disagrees vehemently or not. I was not one of those people like you hear sometimes on national radio where they just hang up on people and then go ahead and insult them. The rules that I always went by, okay, never embarrass the station, never embarrass yourself, never embarrass the caller.
We're going to tack those up on the wall.
Well, we didn't screen either.
No, right. We never screened. Everybody got in without reference to what they might have wanted to talk about.
Right.
I told the producers, just put them on the hold, and I'll get to them.
All right. So before we get to the details of that show, tell us a bit about your history.
Right. I'm the only person, Robin, ever to work and anchor at all three Duluth television stations.
And then they started a fourth one.
What makes that unique is that not only am I the only person to do it, I'm the only person to do it twice.
All right. So when you retire, your Hall of Fame, what jersey are you going to wear?
Number 7. It'll be Mickey Mantle's number.
We don't have a Channel 7.
That's why that's safe.
Right.
No Hall of Fame. I was exceedingly fortunate to have worked for owners and managers and directors that gave me freedom, and they kept hiring me.
Mm-hmm. And what time period are we talking about? Without dating ourselves.
No, that's okay. I came to Duluth in 1971. Never seen it before. And came over that hill and said, wow. Even though I grew up just 90 miles to the west, Minneapolis was our focus, and we never came to Duluth. And so that was really something. And it been home, with the exception of a 5-year span where I spent time on the East Coast. It's been home ever since, and gosh, every single day is just, so happy to be here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Great. And Patty?
I'm originally from Duluth. I got into radio because I needed a job, and they were hiring copywriters. And I actually lied to get my job. I told them I could type. I could not type. They figured out after about 2 months that I couldn't type.
Today, all you have to do is use your thumbs.
Well, right. But in those days, if you knew how to type, that was almost like a different career path, especially for women.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't take business classes or any typing classes in schools. So I was pretty unemployable. But after a couple of months, when they finally realized that they were going through the whiteout, which used to be the little white paint that you put over all your typing errors, that's how long ago and antiquated the equipment was at the radio station I worked at. They said, you can't be the copywriter anymore because you can't type, but would you like to sell advertising? And I said no, until I realized what else would I do. So that was really how I got started. They kicked me out on the street and told me to go sell ads, and I did that for 4 years.
And you had some ownership of stations, though, in your family, though?
No.
No? Okay, that came later?
I was the radio owner.
All right.
There was nobody else in my family that owned them.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm misinformed on that.
That's okay.
Yeah. How big was the Patty McNulty empire?
Well, we had 4 stations in Duluth and 2 in Pine City.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how big the empire ever got. And right around then, they deregulated the media so that you could own more than 1 a.m., 1 f.m., and a television station in the same market. And I got a phone call one day from a broker that had a buyer, and they asked me if I would sell, and I said, well, maybe, and they asked how much, and I quickly added up how much money we owed and came up with a number that would kind of satisfy that and then leave a little on the side, and I threw it out there, totally uninformed. I had no idea what I was doing, and the next day they called back and said, yeah, we'll do it. So it was everything that happened to me in my broadcast career happened completely without a plan.
Right. And is it past tense, or do you still have some tentacles into broadcasting?
No, none at all. Mm-mm. No, I've been out of that since about 2000, was when the Pine City stations were sold.
Okay. Duke, what was your time period here at Wisconsin Public Radio?
Great question. I wish I knew the answer to that. No, something.
We were trying to.
Well, I was on your show, so I should know.
Okay, so something in the neighborhood, Robin. Let's say from 2002 to 2010. Oh, but no, we were here in 2001.
We were
here in.
I think we started right around the 2000 mark.
Yeah, so 2000 to 2000, let's say 12.
8, 9, 10, something. I don't recall how long it was. See? Isn't that bizarre that I cannot remember that?
I have no.
Whenever it was, this is the inheritor of the show, I think. It was you. It had to be somebody before you, by the way, but for a public affairs show.
I don't think they had anybody before us.
That's true. Why do I assume such a thing? No. How could there have been?
No.
In fact, how could there be anyone to follow you?
After a while, after many years of this, I came to John Munson one day, former station regional director. Mm-hmm. I said, John.
And still on our air.
Yep. I said, I want to take the summer off to play golf. And he goes, okay, we'll just put the show on hiatus then. I mean, who says that? And so then we just came back after golf season and did it all over again and picked it right up and kept going.
Right. Well, I may have been on the first time. I'm sure it was on more than once. But I distinctly remember when I first came back to town. I was here briefly in 1986 to witness the aftermath of the reserve mining closure.
Yep.
When I was up in Lake County. And came back in 2004. And you had me on, and Claire Kirch, who we should have gotten on the phone because she still does things like that, caught up and said, the News Tribune is moving to the right with Robin Washington as the new editorial page editor.
Well, when I had the publisher on, it took me a while to get Marty Viscaglia to come on the program.
She was on the same show, yeah.
Yeah, right. And so
she dragged me down. Yes.
Marty and I had, we knew each other from Northland Country Club.
Right, I was about to say golf, yes.
Yeah. And so I always pleaded with her, you got to come on and do the show, you got to come on and do the show. And then so when she came on, of course, the first thing I did was introduce her as the increasingly conservative News Tribune.
Is that what gave Claire the idea?
Well, yeah, Robin, okay. Those were the days when we could say that you were maybe a little conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, you're way left of everything else in the media, just about.
You just blew my cover for
except,
public radio.
Except
here,
yes. The News Tribune, which is now...
it's very conservative.
Yeah.
And this is your opinion. Now, I'm not giving much opinions here. So people can decide if they want me to be left or right. There was some show I did recently where I was challenging Jamie Harvey and saying, can I be a Milton Friedman free market economist here? And I'm going to tell you about that because you like this kind of thing. His whole BAG program, right? BAG at Duluth and the idea of banning, as many communities do. I spend a lot of time in Massachusetts. Cambridge has done this, banning plastic bags. And I didn't realize this until I went to Target one day and I brought my own canvas bag. They give you 5 cents.
Yes.
If you bring it, right. So I said, hey, you know, I'm driven by getting a reward as opposed to being fined. And so that's where I was like super Milton Friedman. He told me I was an anomaly and nobody goes for rewards. Just Robin.
And I've had this discussion just recently on the whole Bagot program. I think the way you change it is a reward.
Yeah.
This is my theory.
We have just turned to the right. You just heard it here. Yes.
Well, no, but think about it. Think about how long ago almost no one wore a seatbelt ever.
Right.
And now, without thinking, we put on a seatbelt. I contend, yes, it was partly an education program, but I also think it was the fine. If you get pulled over because you're not wearing a seatbelt, it used to be $25. I don't know what it is anymore. But who wants to pay that?
We have in our vehicles these cloth bags.
They're wonderful.
Yeah.
I've got tons of them.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
My point here is that left and right isn't quite so easy. Mm-hmm. When you are talking about basic human stuff, when you're talking about blowing up the world, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully keeping the world
safe. Yeah, we have somebody in the White House doing that every day.
He hasn't blown up the world. So if he did, we wouldn't be talking about
he virtually blown up every facet of American government. Can you think of one facet of our government that is better today than it was on Inauguration Day?
Well, that's what Twitter was invented for, right?
Well, I think the Great American Carnage has stopped, as he promised. Don't you remember that? That was his inauguration address.
Well, without going too far into the political realm, which
that's true. Sorry. We only have an hour.
So let's leave it at that we are all here today talking on the radio.
Well, I think blowing up the world is a figurative term.
Thank you. Thank you for saving me on that. You've done radio before, haven't you?
While she's doing what she did when we had a program, she puts me back in check.
And segueing right along, what are you guys doing now?
Well, we still own Zenith Research.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 37 years of Zenith Research. and still have a good group of clients. Just did a big project centering on Superior for a company out of Ottawa. And
the Canadians are invading us?
Yep. And if people think about that for a second, they might be able to figure out who the sponsoring client was. If it's a big thing in Superior and a company out of Canada. Anyway, we did a series of focus groups, and we just did some diabetes research and for a national client. And so, we do maybe 10 projects a year. Some are more extensive than others, and some just require us to put together pools of people that have like interests and that national clients are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we did the big golf study that may or may not ever get resolved for the city of Duluth.
So, and what you found?
Well, what we found and what might be the eventual...
I think we just came back to all politics are local, right?
I don't think there's anything conclusive that we actually found.
I think we found something conclusive.
You always think you found, Nirvana and the truth.
Well, I think we found consensus. We found consensus among the people of Duluth. We found consensus among golfers who played Duluth courses. The consultants out of Denver that we worked with, they had consensus about how to proceed. The only people who didn't were the city, the Friends of Duluth Golf, and the Park Advisory Committee. And, of course, then out of that, all the effort came the other organizations like Keep Lester Green. So you have all these factions, and then there's this body of evidence out here about what large groups of people want that, is not irrelevant, but it didn't, mm-hmm. in the end, the decisions made didn't use the supporting data. So how's
okay.
that?
All right. Well, we'll let that rest.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're talking to Duke Skorich and Patty McNulty. Back to the show. What were some of your most memorable shows?
We had so many things. We had we used to get cabinet level secretaries to come on the program and talk with us. We had major political candidates, virtually all of them, on the program with us. We would have press secretaries for presidents on the air with us. It was just just using what the resources we had together. To find these people in a matter of an hour or two and just say, I need you on the air today. And they right. agreed. Mm-hmm. We had great authors and get them on before they were ever really had national exposure. Because it's Wisconsin Public Radio. And you know what you do? You know what? You make it bigger than life. And people go, sure, okay.
Well, but it is. And yeah. some of our shows actually do go statewide. And, obviously I've done national stuff.
Yeah.
So, it can go anywhere.
Right.
But what I think was the most important thing, and I think what is missing, you talk about what's missing now.
Mm-hmm.
It was the local people, the local political leaders. We had, if you ran for city council, you were going to do an hour with us.
Yeah.
That's just a given. Obviously, mayoral candidates, and in some years we had many on both sides of the bridge. If something big happened, whether, the street caved in or something, whoever was the head of that city department, they would come on with us. It gave people who were listening, as well as those people in office, the opportunity to learn something, to question people. We don't have that anymore. I'm willing to bet that if you stop the average person on the street right now in Duluth, we have an election coming up. They couldn't tell you the names of the city council candidates because they're not exposed.
Overexposed.
I don't think it's overexposure if you sit down for an hour or two on a live radio program and answer questions from the people that have questions for
you. Sure,
them.
But I meant from the consumer or audience point of view, and I'm holding up a cell phone here. When I say overexposed is you get bombarded with so much information. And there's this whole notion going on about news deserts, Superior's being described as a news desert. Not entirely sure I agree with that. It's what you might call news, is how it's being delivered to people. And so one huge problem is you're getting all kinds of stuff on this lovely phone,
right.
But you have to sift through and figure out what's real, what's nonsense. I'll give you a great example. One time, Julia was sitting at home, my wife, I should tell the rest of the people, not everybody knows that sitting here. And she said, oh, Alice Cooper died. I said, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
And the reason I knew he didn't was I have so many friends who are journalists that had he died, somebody I know would have been covering the story.
Sure.
And they would have said, here's my story on Alice Cooper, right? And since I didn't get it in my feed, you know, her feed was nonsense. And yeah. Then she goes, oh, wait, you're right.
Well, yeah,
and by the way, who just died again? The other, Eartha Kitt? Somebody just died
Lena
again.
Lena Horne died
Lena
yesterday.
Lena Horne died again yesterday, right?
Yeah.
So
I should have her on, by the way, before she dies the next time.
But, the nice thing about this is that when you see something like that on your feed, okay, you know that you can go to now instantly the New York Times, the Washington Post.
For a price, Ugarte, a price.
Well, maybe.
Yes, you do. That's the problem.
Which is okay. I'm not debating it. They have to make money some way.
The information should cost something. You go to the Atlantic.
Or WPR.
Sure. Right. So there's plenty of news sources to confirm what everybody knows is a lie.
Except I still...
But the average consumer, though, doesn't know that, and that's the problem. We're all well-versed. I mean, you've been doing this how long? I've been doing this
how long?
You know, yeah. Right. Yeah. And so, again, we know if our friends didn't report it, or we know, frankly, you can't trust it. There's an ABC dot something that isn't ABC News.
Exactly. There's
a lot of those. And so, you know, how is somebody to tell if you're not Lena Horne?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you are, it doesn't matter at this point. She really did die.
She would know. But my point was, yes, there is that sort of, you called it overexposure. But I think from a local standpoint, my local city councilors, I'm not getting feeds about them
That's true in that regard. Right.
I don't know what they stand for. Well, if I can't call them and say, you know, the streets in Duluth are in terrible condition, what kind of a priority would you put on it? Just to hear them talk about that. Just to hear them talk about, I don't know anything.
We
don't hear it.
We were fortunate. In when we were journalists, that we had reporters whose only job was to cover city council,
mm-hmm.
whose only job was to cover county board, and not just on one side of the bridge, but on both sides. And so we had people who their entire day was spent going through every piece of correspondence that was coming into city halls that was going to end up in councilors' packages. So we knew what people in the public were saying. We knew what the government was proposing for the councilors to consider. Every piece of paper was gone over by some reporter. That doesn't exist.
Well, let's take a look at the future in a moment.
Okay.
But let's take a break right now. We're talking to Duke Skorich and Patty McNulty on Hear Me Out. We'll be back after this.
Now, there's a caller for me.
What?
I have another call.
Where?
I think it was two.
Two?
Yes. Hello? Oh.
My first name is Lou. My city is beautiful downtown for Edinburgh. I would like to request some music.
Are you going to let my caller request music
okay,
or not?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead and request.
I've been out in the lake pulling weeds all day. I am currently slamming VO and barbecuing sausages. By the way, I'm naked. I would like to request Jump by Van Halen.
Oh, and that's a beautiful
thought.
Of course you would.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, some people are so funny. We should have done a comedy show.
Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington, and my guests with me in the studio today are Duke Skorich and Patty McNulty, who formerly occupied this studio, but without quite the decoration we have since the remodeling.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
We had windows.
Radio stations are supposed to have windows, not from the studio, anyway.
There's no duct tape.
That's a big improvement. Yeah. And the chairs are all the same color.
Actually, we haven't gotten to the chairs yet. I think they're the same chairs. Yeah.
No, they can't be. Trust me.
So we were talking about what news was and what it is today. And what do you see for the future? What's your best case scenario for how people would get news of a Husky? And this is not saying anything about Husky. I'm sure they're very responsible. But if something did happen to that magnitude, to some similar entity, an explosion like that.
Here's what I'll say about particular issue, okay? I'm surprised at the extent of knowledge among people in Duluth and Superior about what's happening at the refinery.
Mm-hmm.
You're
surprised, impressed in a good way?
Oh, very much so, yeah. Yeah. And the extent of their background knowledge, the extent of current knowledge about what the company is proposing to do with the hydrogen fluoride and mitigation.
The mere fact that people are talking about hydrogen fluoride, that is not something that you go down the street
ever thought that, right?
I'll take three bottles, thank
right.
you.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I think that also points to the younger people who I think surprised me at how much they are concerned about the future of the operation. And their knowledge of the potential environmental catastrophe that could occur.
So can I suggest that they're getting their information somewhere? My daughter is, she's not quite I guess she's older than millennial, but she's 39, let's just put it that way. Mother of two. And she does not subscribe to a newspaper, even though her dad is in it every now and then. But she does read my columns, actually, in the Boston Globe. And she reads all kinds of stuff. She's probably listening to the show.
Right.
Because everything is in her phone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what's amazing is she'll be sitting there with the twins and dealing with their needs, which are quite extensive, and tell me, you've got a typo in my draft, not the final article or something. She's one of my best proofreaders now. So I look at things totally different, seeing how she gleans information. And she grew up in media, so she knows this stuff, legacy stuff. But, I mean, she's taking it in. I never hear them turning on a radio. I don't see a newspaper in the house. Mm-hmm. And yet she's got all the stories.
You asked about the future. And so here's what here's how I use media, okay? I very rarely am on Facebook for a source of news any longer. Most of my information is coming off of my Twitter feed, okay? And I'm seeing in real time what journalists, because I follow a lot of journalists, so I'm watching what they're reporting and then looking at their videos that a lot of them are, you know, instantly recording on their phones during whatever event is occurring, and then looking at people that I respect and how they are responding to these live events, okay? So what are we heading towards, a Max Headroom society where everybody is going to be broadcasting?
We have to say who Max Headroom was our audience.
But it was a show back in who knows when.
The future, which is now.
About the future, which is now. Right. And so everybody is a broadcaster.
Correct.
And
right.
And all you have to do is look at Twitter feeds or Facebook feeds and watch the numbers of people every day who are recording live events. Everybody's a journalist now.
So my question is how you and I have the luxury of having a feed that has a lot of journalists giving that information and people we know personally, who we know their integrity and we know who they work for and we respect them. I think my daughter, I'm not entirely sure, some of it is she knows who my friends are and she knows who the people are in her area and around the country.
Well, I think what's going to happen is just a concentration of what we're seeing today. I'm going to go to the news sources that reinforce what I already think, that have the stories about things that matter to me, and I'm not going to be exposed to things that don't matter to me. And I think we are going to continue to be a society with two sets of facts.
In silos.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And go back to, you know, the golden age of television. Everybody watched Walter Cronkite or watched Huntley and Brinkley. Those were about the two options. Mm-hmm. So while you were getting the news maybe about something you were interested in, there was also that story about something you didn't know anything about. And we no longer have that. I mean, I go
I think it is so sad, really. You and I are about the same age, I think, Robin. And I remember sitting in a library looking up something in the encyclopedia for a paper.
I used to go to libraries to report my stories. The first thing I would do if I had a more involved story, and back then a more involved story would be like a week or more or something, mm-hmm. I'd start out in a library. Yeah.
But what happens when you go to a reference book? You'd see all kinds of other things. Mm. Now, you want to know something? You punch into your phone that exact topic. That is what comes up. That's what you read about. You close that and you move on.
Well, there has to be, in each of us, an acceptance of what is fact.
Now you're asking a whole lot.
And yet every day we have somebody tweeting out fake news, fake news, fake news. Well, you know what? It has to be disproven before you can claim it's fake news. Otherwise, it's fact. And I am constantly, every single day and sometimes every hour, amazed at what people will believe as fact and then share that and yet complain about fake news. So I don't know what the future is. I mean, whatever the next morph of this thing, you know, is, and whatever Jack at Twitter is deciding what he's going to come out with next.
Well, I think you hit on it, which is the future is going to be different. And 10 years ago or 15 or whatever it was when I was on the show.
Yes.
I didn't have what I have in my hand right now, this phone. I think Marty was all excited. Marty Buscaglia, our publisher at the time, who was on with me or dragged me here. She was one of the early adopters of the BlackBerry.
Yes.
And then the next year she had.
I remember that.
Right. We all had them, and we thought they were great. And a BlackBerry is, well, a BlackBerry is ancient history now.
Yeah.
And unimaginable. This thing I have in my hand, this iPhone, is would have been unimaginable back then.
Everything in your life is in your hand right now, if you want it to be.
Right. So maybe the future is in our hands, too. How's that for us?
Which is sort of scary.
I'm trying to find a happy note.
Well, it's more convenient and fits in a small pocket. There's the happy part.
Some things don't change, though, the basic format of radio. And I don't know that you guys had a theme song.
We did.
You did?
Well, we opened with a different song every day. The only song that would be consistently was, you know, Duke of Earl.
It had his name in it.
Funny it had my name in it.
We should do something about that. How about this?
Meet Kathy, who lived most everywhere.
Okay.
From Zanzibar to Barclay Square. But Patty's only famous like to cook and see from Brooklyn Heights.
That's funny.
Okay, you know what? Thank you, Kathy. We have to be careful when we introduce ourselves. Hi, I'm Duke. I have to go first.
Are you identical cousins is what I want to know.
Yeah. But I can't.
It's radio. Leave that up to your imagination.
We can't say, hi, this is Patty and I'm Duke.
Yeah.
Well, we can among younger people.
You could have said that.
Yeah,
you
could have said that. Yeah.
If I had been your producer, you would have.
That's funny.
Whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking to Patty Duke. No, we haven't. We've been talking to Duke Skorich and Patty. I'm going to say it right. We've been talking to Patty McNulty and Duke Skorich. There we go. Veterans of the Twin Ports broadcast scene and of this particular show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Robin.
Can we come back?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Coming up.
The big announcement for Duluth today, $1.5 million is expected to be pumped into the city's economy because it's the new home of the Independent Television, or ITV, Festival.
You may have heard of the Catalyst Content Festival, recently relocated to Duluth from Vermont. You may not have heard the full financial picture behind it. We'll speak with the festival's director and look at the books after this. Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. Danielle Kading joins me with the roundup of this week's regional news. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Robin. This first item is yours, right? And a story you've been looking into for a few months?
That's right, quite a while. And it's a story that's gotten a lot of coverage in the area, but not much about its finances.
The city of Duluth will host a convention for Hollywood executives known as the Independence Television Festival.
The city of Duluth it's and the worldwide. Entire region has a golden opportunity this fall to become part of a growing creative industry. Duluth will host ITV Fest, which brings together...
Duluth is set to receive a big national spotlight.
The big announcement for Duluth today, $1.5 million is expected to be pumped into the city's economy because it's the new home of the Independent Television, or ITV Festival.
This fall, the Catalyst Content Festival is coming to Duluth as a place for budding TV producers to exhibit their work and maybe pick up a contract from HBO or Netflix, who will also likely be sending executives to town, shopping for series and new ideas. The event began in Los Angeles in 2006 as the Independent Television Festival, or ITV Fest, and then moved to the small hamlet of Dover, Vermont. There, it was taken over in 2013 by Phil Gilpin Jr., a native of the Boston area who worked for several years behind the scenes at HBO. His roots in Dover include his parents running a bed and breakfast there, and Gilpin also ran several small enterprises. The ITV Fest would be his largest, promising to bring tourists and their pocketbooks to Dover and also encourage TV producers and filmmakers to consider the area as a location for their productions. I spoke with several people involved with the festival in one way or the other in Dover, and there's general agreement it was a pretty impressive annual event. But it wasn't cheap. Gilpin sought support from the town, requesting annual grants in the $50,000 range. When his last request was only approved at $35,000, he moved the event to Manchester, Vermont, a town of about 4,000 people, more than twice as large as Dover, and more than a century of catering to the rich and famous. Manchester hosted it in 2017 and 18, yet it too found the monetary support to be too rich for his taste. Gilpin says he was encouraged by the entertainment industry to expand and shopped around again for a new home. Last fall, he found Duluth. Earlier this year, the Duluth City Council approved a $50,000 grant to the festival out of tourism funds. Yet despite widespread media coverage, the finances of ITV Fest have not appeared in any widespread media reports until now. Wisconsin Public Radio looked at the tax filings of the ITV Fest for 4 years, 2014, 15, 16, and 17, and found it has carried a six-figure debt for each of those years. I spoke with Phil Gilpin about the returns earlier this week.
All right, go okay. for it.
Okay. So in the 2014 990, your federal tax form, you ended the year with a balance of negative $141,672. In 2015, it was $130,462 negative. In 2016, it was negative $146,268. And then in 17, it went up, or the loss increased, to negative $274,250,000. So the first question on that is simply, is it viable? Is this sustainable?
The organization itself? Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, so we had a choice to make. So the organization started in 2006 in Los Angeles and was out there for 7 years. And then when we took it over and moved it to Vermont, the business philosophy that we were operating on was the first couple of years, we would have to do a really good job of proving the organization all over again, proving that we could bring people in for the festival to town. So we did, and we had assumed that as we brought more and more people in and brought in more revenue, that the community and state and regional support would increase. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. There were some small increases here and there. There were also some decreases. So we decided to double down. And after the first couple of years, we said, okay, let's find a way to bring in even more executives and bring in even more talent. And let's just grow at a whole nother level. So since there weren't any grant or funding sources available to us in Vermont that were interested in what we were doing, because there was a little bit of a misunderstanding, I guess. A lot of people saw us just as a festival event. They didn't see us as the full economic development organization that we are for the arts. So we went out and found other sources of money to borrow in order to keep the organization growing. Again, under the assumption that if we kept doing a better and better job, eventually there would be a a turnaround in the support in the local region and statewide for film and TV in general, and that just never happened.
Mm-hmm. And that support, that outside support, included $262,697 on the 2017 report, return rather, that is described as unsecured notes and loans payable to unrelated third parties.
Yeah, there was, a combination of bank loans and philanthropists and other supporters of the organization who were willing to bankroll, the expansion that we wanted to undergo that I was just describing. So I don't have the forms in front of me, but I have to look exactly, but I'm pretty sure that's what that refers to.
Sure. Yeah. You also have in the revenue, ticket sales, $67,363. Submission fees for the people to exhibit their work, $32,329. Sponsorships, $123,099. And $25,000 from the Vermont Production Council. Were the tickets high enough? There's what in business is basically revenue and expenses, right? And so if you can't cut expenses anymore, and you pointed out that expenses perhaps had to go up because you wanted to bring the executives to town, you wanted to really get the festival its prominence that it deserved, but perhaps the ticket price should have gone up or these fees.
Yeah, perhaps. There was a real interesting dynamic, especially locally with that, where we were actually getting a lot of vocal pushback that we were already charging too much for tickets. We had a lot of people in the region saying that $20 to $30 a day was too expensive. Could we do it for $5 or $10? Or perhaps we could just give away local tickets for free. So we found ourselves in a very interesting situation where people flying in from around the world were happy to pay, a $100 or $200 ticket fee for the week because there were various ticket options.
Right.
But locally, people were looking for us to go the other direction. So I don't think that raising the ticket prices would have necessarily been the answer. But hindsight, you never know.
Right. The Vermont Production Council, I know it was to encourage filmmaking in Vermont, but that's also an organization you're affiliated with, correct?
It was, yeah. So what happened with the Vermont Production Council is the Vermont State Film Commission, I believe the last year that it was operational was around 2011 or so. And so there hadn't been an organization here in Vermont that was focused on promoting film and television production. Well, after having the festival here for a number of years, we had a number of producers that were asking us about filming in Vermont, and they wanted to bring their productions in from the outside. And people who are producing projects around the U.S. and Canada right now are in a lot of states, they have access to tax incentives and rebates and some type of financial support.
Right. As we do so in Minnesota.
As you do in Minnesota, correct, with the rebate program and hopefully soon to be a tax credit program. And so we went to the powers that be in Vermont and kept pitching and pushing for some type of support for productions. And it simply wasn't going to happen. So we decided to start the Vermont Production Council so that outside producers at least had a phone number to call and a website to go to so that if they were interested, they could get in touch with us so we weren't missing out on the opportunities to bring in productions. We could at least catalog them. But when we left we left Vermont last year, since that was us, that closed as well.
Okay.
So there is no more Vermont Production Council.
Oh, okay. And then lastly, there's one form that appears, well, it's always on a 990 called Schedule O, and it lists things like salaries and wages, in this case, $10,485, red carpet, $9,463. I know you can't have it without the red carpet.
right.
Tent rental, $34,462. We just did a story about the Big Top Chautauqua, and I know those tents are not cheap. Toilets, of course, $10,920. The only thing is that the same numbers are on each schedule for 2014, 15, 16, and 17. That would appear to be a mistake. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'd have to take another look at it. It sounds like, you know, a lot of the specific items that you mentioned, which are only a couple out of the whole festival expense sheet, a lot of those ones were the ones that, you know, they're like long-term contracts that have the same repeating fee every year. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to look at it, but it sounds like it could be a typo. Yeah.
Okay.
Your last question really hit on it. If you go back and look at a lot of those expenses there, tent rentals, toilets, things like that, have you been to where we held the festival previously? Have you been out here?
I've been to Dover. Vermont? I've been to Manchester.
Yeah. Well, then you know, because you've seen it, that there aren't a lot of, in fact, almost, Dover only has one movie theater. I think Manchester only has two. So we actually had to build movie theaters and venues from scratch, literally turning grass fields into a 300-seat movie theater. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, why are we in Duluth? The amount of infrastructure and just world-class arts infrastructure that has been built there over the years, it's heaven for us coming from a place where we were literally building tents on lawns to be able to walk into a North Shore and walk into the Zeitgeist and go to Fickers and go to the Depot and all these places. So one of the stories that we're going to be focusing telling at the festival is how the arts history of Duluth is really what laid the groundwork for us to be there. Mm-hmm. So it's a great part of the reason of why we're there.
Great.
Thanks. I'll see you next week.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Phil Gilpin Jr., the executive director of the Catalyst Content Festival, formerly known as the ITV Fest, which has moved to Duluth after moving from two previous locations in Vermont, the towns of Manchester and Dover, and an earlier move from Los Angeles, where it started. Next week on Hear Me Out, we'll take a deeper look at the festival, including opinions from those involved or affiliated with it, of how well it accomplished its goals in Vermont and its potential in the Twin Ports. Danny?
That's pretty comprehensive. Did he say if the city council asked him for those tax returns before they voted on that to grant him $50,000 and the mayor approved it?
Yeah, he said he showed it to anyone who asked for them. So I did contact a few elected officials about that this week, but it's a holiday week, so I understand why they didn't get back to me yet.
Well, what will you have next week then?
Well, we'll follow up with those officials and we'll hear from people in Vermont about how well they think the festival did there and, again, any advice they have for Duluth. We're also scheduled to have a more extensive interview with Phil Gilpin, as well as some of the backers he's found for the festivals in Duluth.
Okay. Well, turning back to a story we had last week, I visited the Rainbow Gathering yesterday on July 4th, the biggest day. Thousands of people turned out to a secluded spot in the Shawangunkale National Forest to pray for peace. And the ceremony is, again, part of the first ever National Rainbow Family Gathering in Wisconsin. The Rainbow Family is a loose-knit group of people that has gathered every year since 1972 in a national forest to pray for peace. Karen Zirk of San Diego, California, has been coming to the gathering for years.
For this day, it's all about the 4th. So much emotion and love that's here. We do this om, it's like we found a way to bring peace down to earth for at least one day.
People welcomed one another at the gathering with hugs, saying I love you to those they met. Back in Iron River at O'Brien's C-Store, cashier Abby Nelson says people have had mixed feelings about the gathering.
Some people think it causes trouble. Some people think that, like, some people don't care, but I feel like people fear what they don't know. Like, they don't, like, they're afraid of what they don't know, like, what's going on. So they're like, all these people are coming into town, and we're a really small town. So, like, with everybody coming in, they're like, oh, we just want them to leave and stuff. Like, they don't know what to expect.
Bayfield County Sheriff Paul Susenka says they've had minor problems.
There have been a few incidents during the week, a few arrests for some drug offenses, but this Forest Service has issued some citations for a variety of regulations, but all in all, going pretty well.
Bayfield County Sheriff says around 30 arrests have been made for mostly misdemeanor crimes and a couple felonies. A spokeswoman with the U.S. Forest Service agreed there have been minor issues. Around 5,200 people were at the site yesterday. The gathering wraps up on Sunday, July 7th. And the Superior City Council overrode the mayor's veto of a vote to censure one of its members on Tuesday night. Councilors voted to censure member Jenny Van Sickle at its last meeting for a critical tweet she posted about the city attorney's work. Superior Mayor Jim Payne vetoed the censure, but that led to questions over a potential conflict of interest since the mayor and Van Sickle are in a relationship. The state code of ethics for local government officials doesn't say anything about relationship conflicts outside of those that create a benefit for an immediate family member. Van Sickle says she's not concerned about any appearance of impropriety.
In these chambers, I'm a counselor. I'm qualified. I was elected and re-elected on merit.
Superior Mayor Jim Payne says all kinds of relationships occur in government.
It really is just up to the voters to decide if that's inappropriate.
The city council president says he's only concerned about the potential imbalance of power it could create. And the Price County Review reports that the Park Falls paper mill could reopen in 2 weeks under an agreement approved by a Price County judge on Monday. The agreement between Flambeau River Papers and Cellmark Paper Company would grant the mill the ability to seek $2 million in financing. The deal would allow 89 employees to return to work and pay 68 workers laid off in early June. Cellmark accounts for the majority of the paper mill's revenue. The Price County Review reports the company ceased payments on June 5th. The deal approved in the court action on Monday requires the company to continue buying paper from the mill for the next 2 months. And the Ashland Daily Press reports the American Birkebeiner Ski Foundation has signed a 2-year lease to use the more than 700-acre former Telemark Resort property. The foundation would use trails and facilities for events and snowmaking. The Telemark Resort has been closed since 2013. The resort is next to the start of the Berkey Trail for its ski race that draws thousands from across the country each year. The Daily Press reports the lease allows the foundation access to additional water sources for snowmaking in an effort to guarantee a Berkey race. The area has seen less snow with warmer winters in recent years, causing the cancellation of the race in 2017. And that's a look back on some of the news of the week.
That is a look back at some of the serious-sounding news. We need something lighter. Okay. So I got to go to a Japanese tea ceremony this week. Have you ever been to one?
One time, I think, while ago.
Well, I'm told the next time you visit will be entirely different. That's the sound of the peace bell in Enger Park. Some of the people ringing it this week were delegates from the Duluth sister city of Ohara Usumi City, Japan, who were here for a week-long trip that included a tea ceremony at the Duluth Women's Club. It was something that the tea master says you never experience the same way twice.
I'm Yoshiko Mikami. I'm from Japan next to Tokyo, Chiba Prefecture. We use the word in tea ceremony. Ichibo ichie means once in lifetime. Never same tea ceremony end. So we respect the meeting and the tea ceremony, so we respect each other.
I got to experience it as, full disclosure, a member of the board of the Duluth Art Institute, the event's co-sponsor with the Women's Club and Duluth Sister Cities. As my first time, I had to agree, it was calming. And those who had been to one before agreed with the tea master. You never do experience it the same way twice. That's it for this edition of Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. Next week, more on the Catalyst Content Festival. And we leave you now with the soothing sounds of the Peace Bell.